And welcome back. We continue our board meeting with our next topic being the equity method, and I hand over to Filippo.
Thank you, Andreas. The first objective of this session was to provide the board with an overview of the application questions that have been identified as within the scope of the equity method research project. In March this year, the board agreed on a criteria and process to select application questions, which has been reproduced in Appendix to Agenda Paper 13. The staff applied the criteria and the process to initial list obtained from various sources, including input from national standard setters and accounting firms. Paragraph 10 to 17 of Agenda Paper 13 include the list of application questions currently identified as within the scope of the project. Although we remind the board members that we consider this process to be iterative, sorry.
Requiring several iterations.
Thank you. And therefore, future decisions in the project may require to reconsider the list. And before we move to the second part of the paper, I will stop and ask the board members if there is questions or comments on the list of application questions.
Okay, thank you, Filippo. Floor is open. Do board members have any questions?
Patron.
No, just to say that I quite like the pragmatic approach that has been retained by the staff in the paper for this project. And no, I don't have specific comments, concerns on the list of the issues identified. I think it reflects probably what needs to be fixed. And so maybe we'll comment on later on the approach you propose us. So I will stop there. But as for the list, I think it's
Mary?
Thanks. Just an observation about paragraph 17, which is the issue around contingent consideration. And you note here that IAS 28 does not provide specific guidance. Repeating myself for emphasis, I think we've got to be disciplined about when we are analogizing, or sorry, when we are saying apply the BizCom accounting model and when we are not applying the BizCom model. So to me, this question about how you account for contingent consideration is not independent of the question about, is the transaction in which the contingent consideration was recognized something that you accounted for applying the IFRS 3 requirements, or is it something we concluded you do not apply the IFRS 3 requirements? So I don't think you can say, well, at least if we were going to say it's a transaction that we're accounting for applying the IFRS 3 requirements, maybe the staff could come to us and say, even though we still think you should provide practical expedient or some kind of relief, that's different. But I don't think it's a conceptual choice to say, do I have to do this bit of the BizCom model? Do I have to do that bit of the BizCom model? I think it's an all or nothing about applying the BizCom model.
Any further comments? Everyone in dozing mode. Okay, I think then we can proceed.
Okay, well, Mary's comment leads well actually into the second part, the main part of the session, on the project's next steps. Paragraph 26 of IAS 28 notes that many procedures appropriate for application of the equity method are similar to consolidation procedures, and the concepts underlying the procedures for acquisition of subsidiary are also adopted in accounting for the acquisition of an associate or joint venture. However, although this paragraph is in IAS 28, when the board made changes to the principles for business combinations and consolidation accounting in developing IFRS 3 and IFRS 10, these changes were generally not reflected in application of the equity method in IAS 28. we find this is making it a bit difficult when we're identifying which principles to apply to different application questions. For example, whether we might be in a fair value model or in a cost model. Now, given the requirement in paragraph 26 of IAS 28 predates issuance of IFRS 3 and IFRS 10, the staff would like to ask the board if we can go and perform some research to look at the changes introduced by IFRS 3 and IFRS 10 and consider how they might transfer across to IAS 28 to see if it helps us to get some consistency in identifying the principles that apply to IAS 28. For example, to see if paragraph 26 in IAS 28 still holds up. We think it would be helpful to take this step back and ensure we have a consistent approach to addressing the application questions rather than trying to address them individually in a piecemeal fashion. And our first question for this meeting is on page 7 of the paper, and it's whether you agree that the staff should perform this research. And we also welcome any thoughts you have about the interaction of IFRS 3 and IFRS 10 with IAS 28.
Thanks, Michelle. Sue?
I don't disagree with doing this work. Personally, I'm not sure how helpful it's going to be, because I think at its heart, partly what it shows is that we just don't have much detail to work from in IAS 28, and so as a consequence, all of this detail or noise is sort of flowing into IAS 28 from the specificity that have been added in other places, but maybe we would have just had a vacuum otherwise. So I'm not sure that it's a... So it's useful to understand the interaction, but I do sort of worry a little bit that it's just going to lead to people, for example, if people don't like fair value measurement much, they're reacting to the fact they don't like fair value measurement and it's flowing in through some of the other places. So I'm just not sure what we're going to do with it in terms of us helping understand the principles in 28, which is where we were starting. Helps us identify if we might want to block off some interactions, I guess. People think the outcomes aren't that great, but so I don't disagree. I'm just a bit puzzled by it.
I don't disagree either with the staff. Just that I felt the presentation made by ASBG during the last ASF meeting was an interesting one. Saying that the equity accounting is an hybrid approach. It is, in effect. I'm not requesting the staff to further explore conceptually this notion. It's not what I'm saying at all. But I think de facto it is what it is, an hybrid approach. So I don't know if it could answer Sue's concern if alongside appreciating the relation with IFRS 10, IFRS 3, you also see or analyze the relationship with IFRS 9, notably the initial recognition of an equity accounted investment is at cost, and it's like any equity instruments in IFRS 9, I would say. So a fair value of the consideration transferred at the time. So I don't know if it could answer Sue's concern if alongside analyzing the interrelation with IFRS 10 and IFRS 3, you also analyze the interrelation with IFRS 9. So as to be in a position to answer the specific issues you have identified, and only that, not necessarily fundamentally reconsidering conceptually what the equity method accounting is about.
Mary?
Yeah. Okay. I support the staff looking at this area to see if we can get either more history background in terms of understanding why some things were updated but others weren't. That may give us insights into how to move forward. But to start answering maybe Sue's concern, I think also having a good inventory of the places where those interactions apply could maybe help us figure out how to package discussions that we're having in terms of coming up with proposed responses. One question, I think it's a rephrasing or a subset of this research rather than an a true add to it, is to think about gathering the information to see if we can answer the question, does the statement that says, you know, look to the acquisition method, apply only for the transaction in which you gain significant influence or joint control? Or should it also be applied to subsequent changes in interest when you don't move outside of what I'll call the band? So, you know, when you might increase your level of ownership, but without flipping from into or out of significant influence. And because I think if we could answer that question, it again would help define the population of issues to which we are applying this, you know, this point of when do you refer to the IFRS 3 accounting model?
Bruce?
Thanks very much. I'm very supportive of the staff doing this. I mean, I think at the end of the day, we've identified that there are challenges with the equity method, and I think that when you do that and we're identifying their challenges, paragraph 26 causes a problem for us, because what that says to me is if I can't see guidance, I need to be looking at IFRS 10 to see what principles there I can apply. So I think we should definitely be doing that. I'm conscious, yeah, I think it will be good to have a list of where we see those interaction, but I think that, you know, if the intention is to leave paragraph 26 there, I think that we've got to be careful if we're going to put out other guidance, how that potentially conflicts in that. So I would be very supportive of doing this research.
Thanks. Tadeo?
Thank you, Andreas. I agree with performing research to understand the interaction similarities between IAS 28 and other standards, especially IFRS 10 and IFRS 3. I think it will help, and I think that Bear mentioned that kind of inventory of these differences and similarities. It will help to deal with the practical questions as well, independently on whether people think differently about what equity accounting is. And then, for example, paragraph 26, for those that understand equity accounting as a kind of one-line consolidation, it's like an anchor. And then it's important to understand whether if we, for example, remove this paragraph, it means that we are completely losing the track in terms of this concept or going to a total different way of looking at equity accounting. I mean that before making any decision, I think it's important to understand the interaction between IAS 28 and the other standards. It will definitely help to answer some of the practical issues we have mapped already. Thank you.
Thanks, Tadeo. Rika?
Andreas, I think it's really helpful for us to understand the interaction with IAS 28 and old and the new IFRS 3 and IFRS 10. But I have a sympathy with Anne's concerns about stakeholders' argument either way. So I thought the ultimate objective will be to provide a solution that can address the issue. But that is a kind of the ultimate objective. But before doing that, I just wondering if we do the research as objective of this research is just to understand the interaction and make it the basis to decide whether we like to fill the gap we already identified, or we just leave the current situation as they are. And then if we decide to explore further to fill the gap, and then maybe we need to decide how to conclude as a solution. So I rather want to have a two-step approach based on the research outcome.
Anne?
Thanks, Andreas. I did I just agree with the staff. I think it's a good idea to do this, and one of the reasons I think that is that as the staff looks further into IAS 28, they are grappling with the fact that the standard has had multiple modifications over time, and so it reflects thinking that's gone on outside the standard, but it reflects it in an uneven way. So there are inconsistencies within IAS 28. There's inconsistencies between IAS 28 and other standards. And that's making it really difficult for staff as they're trying to do the objective of the project, which is to draw out these principles and then apply their principles to the application issues. So by looking at IAS 28 and comparing with IFRS 3 and IFRS 10, that gives the opportunity to show where those inconsistencies are, and rather than just proceeding with trying to draw the principles and then trying to apply them into an application situation, the additional research will at least indicate where there are dangers or errors of trying to draw a principle out of IAS 28 that may well have been reflecting an old way of thinking and not the thinking that's behind IFRS 3 and 10. So I do think there is some value in doing this. We have recognised for some time that the task as it's currently framed with IAS 28 is not a straightforward one. So I do think the examination of the three standards has some merit in trying to help with the objective of what the staff are trying to do with IAS 28. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. So I'm hearing broad support for it. Can we have a vote on the first question? Can I see a show of hands who agrees with the staff recommendation?
12.
Thank you. To you.
I don't know. Do we need to ask the second hand question?
The second one was probably, do you have any other comments? beyond what you've already mentioned. So, creating the inventory is an idea that I quite like, actually, to also be mindful of where we have come across issues. Certainly helpful. And I think taking on board Sue's comment in... by looking into IFRS 3 and IFRS 10, are we not inadvertently taking a position here already? Because we are looking into those standards that actually give emphasis on one method in IAS 28 rather than the other one, right?
So I think Sue raises a fair point about not sure that this will lead us to a conclusion, because I think that's where we are. But we feel we need to do it to possibly make sure we can be consistent with Mary's points. And I think that particularly arose when we had the ASAF meeting, because although we had a really useful discussion with the ASAF, I think you raised we needed to be careful this didn't look like some form of beauty parade, which made us sort of stand back and think maybe we need to think a bit more about the interaction and how the other standards around business combination and consolidations. So it was really the catalyst for this was the ASAF meeting.
Haven't had a chance to listen into that, you still have a chance to do so, right? It's on our website. Was a very good meeting, I think. Okay. Any further comments, questions? Nothing from your side? You think you got everything that you could get out of us?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess we sort of put that question there. Just in case board members wanted to express their initial thoughts about these interactions, if anyone did, but we can take it offline. If anyone does have some initial thoughts or some burning ideas, we'd be quite happy to hear them.
Anyone inclined?
The only thing would be not for forgetting to also assess the interaction with IFRS 9. We are in the middle of
my only observation is, you know, we have this debate that we're not getting into, but sort of behind everything, which is, you know, what is the equity method? Is it a one-line consolidation or a measurement method in its own right? And we've decided we're not going to, you know, debate that, but rather sort of just look at what we've got and work from that. But
the fact that we even have this sort of hard coding from IAS 28 into mechanics of consolidation and BizComs accounting. Just saying, you know.
Noted.
But that was the kind of comment we were looking for. So that's very helpful. Thank you.
And very subtle. Okay.
Michelle has wants to ask a question.
Well, not ask a question, but one point we did notice when we were doing some initial research is in developing IFRS 3 and IAS 27, the board had observed that like the loss of control, significant influence and joint control are economically similar event and thus should be accounted for similarly. And that was during development of IFRS 3. So that obtaining or losing control or significant influence would be significant economic events leading to remeasurement at fair value of the retained interest. But during development of IFRS 10 and particularly 11, the board reviewed this and decided that obtaining or losing control is fundamentally different to loss or obtaining or losing significant influence or joint control. With this change in thinking, that does make us consider whether we should be revisiting paragraph 26 with a view to looking at that more current thinking.
Mary.
And just building on that and going back to the point I made about trying to answer the question about whether it's only the crossing the hurdle transaction that gets special accounting or whether it's broader, I guess tipping my hand a bit, before I had the insight you just provided about what your initial research has provided, I think my gut reaction would have been that the transaction that's analogous to gaining control is the one where it crosses and not necessarily the subsequent changes within the same interest, type of interest, so let's say within significant influence. And if that's the case, thinking back to the ASAF discussion, that has implications for what the measurement objective is, I think, for subsequent changes and balances. So that's how I see this research feeding into some of those other discussions.
Can I just test that, Mary, that I understand you? Would the same apply if you went from significant influence to joint control? Because there the method doesn't change, yet it is a different character of the interest that you are having.
I think that's an explicit decision that we should make, because I think generally in this area we treat significant influence or joint control as having the same implications and ramifications. It's not just that they use the same accounting method, but that when you gain this or brackets or joint control. And so I think just pausing to then say, well, what if you flip from one to the other? Is that the same kind of significance implications require the same kind of reset? It's a valid question. Mm-hmm. I don't have the same kind of gut reaction on that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sue, you'd like to take on?
I think the other thing just to throw into the mix to think about is on those sort of crossover points where you're gaining or losing control, significant influence, joint control, whatever, and moving sort of between standards and potentially also between methods, it might be useful also to think about what that means for the anchor when you get to the next standard. So, for example, if you go out of 28 and into 9, 9 already says you have to start on a fair value basis, so thinking about how that links in. And then also at the IFAS discussion, the group of standard setters that are thinking about some 28 questions, when they're looking at what the meaning of cost would be when you come into 28 and places like that, maybe thinking about that as well, because some of the sort of knock on other sides of these entries are, you know, it's disposal accounting here but acquisition accounting there, and what makes sense as an anchor for the different starting accounting might just be something to think about to throw into the mix.
I don't disagree with Mary's comment on crossing hurdles. On crossing hurdles, I totally agree with her. Then, obviously, when you're within a hurdle, or how to say it, you are already equity accounting and you increase your percentage or whatever, there will be also a practical challenge. Because when you have a dilution once every quarter, a dilution, not an investment, not a cash investment. If you apply IFRS 10 considerations there, it may be a bit challenging practically. So I think that's why I said initially I quite like the pragmatic approach you're retaining with the list of issues and so on and so forth. There will be both. And I quite like the idea of having this conceptual thorough analysis of the interrelations with other standards. But at the same time, on specific topics, there will be practical challenges, and those practical challenges probably will have their answers in their own meaning, in their own way, independently of what is. Even if conceptually even if conceptually we think it should be close to IFRS 10, maybe it wouldn't be the best practical solution for an increase in interest without changing the method of accounting. So there will be practical challenges to take into consideration then also.
Mary doesn't disagree with you, but...
I want to build on that because so we don't end up passing on to the next version of the board the same kind of mixed package that we inherit, you know, with IAS 28. I think it would be very good in this area to go through kind of a two-step analysis on these things, which is, okay, what's the, based on our research or thinking or analysis, whatever, what do we think conceptually is the strongest argument? And then to say explicitly, separately, should we provide relief or explore, on practical grounds, an alternative approach? Because if we are clear in labeling something as relief from what we think is the pragmatic fit, 5 years later, people won't be trying to infer from the accounting we specified 10 years from now, what we had as the concept. It'll be clear that we said, well, conceptually it's this, but the costs of doing that are sufficiently high that maybe we would do that instead. So I think when you're going, when we get to the point of saying, well, what does this mean in terms of how we answer things, to maybe take it in the two explicit steps of where does this send us conceptually, and then let's do a cost benefit of following the concept and seeing if there's relief we should do.
And looking at Nick sitting there between you two, probably also thinking about what useful information's coming out of
it. I wasn't going to say I was so close to lifting up.
And read your body language. We're looking more and more anxious.
But I think there are already quite requirements in the standard that require providing information to users.
It's useful information, I think, is the focus.
So demanding.
So fussy.
We are more. I think the elements are already there. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think. And so there we are more focusing on the accounting rather than just the disclosures or the information only to users. Because I think there are already sufficient requirements currently in the standard.
It all has to be useful at the end of the day.
Yeah,
the accounting too.
Sure. Yeah. So you can have global assessment at the end, of course, to make sure that...
Anybody's got any idea what that carrying amount means?
What's that answer to your liking?
do you regret having asked that question?
I can't even say that gives us some direction. It gives us some food for thought, I think is the right expression.
Probably as good as it can get today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very
ultimately,
much.
We reach a consensus with Mary. We all, I don't disagree, but we have the team to reach a consensus. A lot of men disagree.
Can you cope with one line of footer?
Oh, yeah. Good word.
Okay.
Oh, there we go, 2012.
Okay.